Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Reddit aims to raise almost $750 million in its upcoming IPO. CNBC's Leslie Picker combed through their latest S-1 filing.
I'm told the company is aiming to set a final price in the middle of next week and will debut the following day with a listing on the NYSE.
Bitcoin hitting new records and NVIDIA moving up, moving down, and moving up again.
It was a 10% reversal intraday, and so people are wondering if the easy days of NVIDIA are behind it.
And then a huge interview with former President Donald Trump, his first since President Biden's State of the Union address.
China is right now our boss. They are the boss of the United States, almost like we're a subsidiary of China. And that's because the Biden administration has been so weak.
Mr. President, is there no concern that China could impose retaliatory tariffs or retaliatory actions that would make doing business in China difficult for American companies, which are dependent on China for growth?
That's okay.
It's okay?
He explains his TikTok swap, once pro-ban and now changing course.
The thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media.
But do you believe that TikTok is a national security threat or not? Because if it is, and I believe that the emergency powers order that you had put in place at the time suggested that it was. Was that not true?
I do believe that.
Plus his thoughts on crypto, taxes, and Elon Musk. It's Monday, March 11th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Andrew by in 3, 2, 1, cue Andrew.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live at the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Joe Kernan and Melissa Lee this morning, who's hanging out with us with a big show today. Becky is off today.
Now, the record here, Bitcoin, in fact, reaching a new high above 71,000 this morning. Take a look at that move. I mean, it has been just a staggering move. 71,758 as we speak and climbing. And we should note that a lot of the crypto adjacent names, Coinbase, et cetera, they are also seeing continued gains. This coming 3 days after Ether breached the 4,000 mark for the first time since December of 2021. Also trading higher earlier this morning, Coinbase, Robinhood, all of them.
Have you anecdotally heard about Coinbase and what goes on there? I have.
What do you mean anecdotally? You mean the zero balances on the high volume days?
No, I've been looking at it just it's like, hey, what's going on? And I've seen it. There's a number there, and it's like, oh, that's nice. And it goes to zero.
Brothers, we were just talking about.
Yeah. I have no money.
In some ways, that's a good sign for Coinbase, that they're seeing such high volume that they have this weird glitch.
But they got to get it, you know, get it together if they're going to be the main. But it's hard with that much interest. Larry Fink is suddenly, you know, it's Larry Fink that's got Bitcoin surging. I think maybe Jay Powell has something to do with it, too. Momentum is building in Congress for a bill that would ban TikTok in the U.S. unless its Chinese parent company divests it. And join us now on that bill and the other big headlines on Capitol Hill this week, CNBC Washington correspondent Emily Wilkins. You lost. You're here. You're not in Washington, are you?
We'll back. Well, we'll get to Washington, much like the lawmakers who are currently not in D.C., but we'll get to there by the end of the day.
Break.
We will make our way. But yeah, we're expecting this TikTok bill. We're anticipating a vote for it on Wednesday in the House. I mean, when we saw it go through committee, we saw it pass 50-0. That's not very common for any piece of legislation that has some of the controversy that a TikTok bill has around it. So it's going to be really interesting to see what those margins are in the House. I was talking last week with Chairman Mike Gallagher. He's the head of the Select Committee on the CCP. And he said, look, if the House is really strong, we're hoping that this can get a vote in the Senate, go through in the Senate. Biden's already said he's going to sign it. It's really surprising how quickly this bill has moved, though. And of course, that raises questions. What are the challenges and could it potentially slow down in the Senate?
What does divestiture actually mean? I mean, is it completely a wholesale sale of that division?
That's really how lawmakers are pitching it. And they're saying 165 days for TikTok to find another buyer to go off somewhere else. And of course, this has kind of raised questions about what a sale would look like, who would be the potential buyer. And certainly you've seen some of that trickle into the politics of it as well. TikTok has said, hey, that's not really enough time for us. But at the same point, again, talking with Mike Gallagher, he said, you know what? TikTok knew that this was coming. They knew that we had problems. They knew that we had issues with parent company ByteDance. And they knew that we wanted to find a way to divest the two of them.
You think it's a slam dunk that this thing gets signed?
Not necessarily. And I say that only because you have seen some valid concerns get raised around the TikTok bill. You've seen, number one, First Amendment concerns, right? Mm-hmm. The freedom of speech platform, we know that in the past that has tanked some of the other efforts to ban TikTok. And then, of course, the fact that this bill actually names TikTok, and that can wind up with a couple legal issues for them calling the company out the way they do. Of course, lawmakers say this isn't just a TikTok bill. This could apply to other apps as well. But then you ask them what apps, and they don't necessarily have an answer right now.
I mean, don't you, in your heart of hearts, don't you sort of feel uncomfortable? I don't. Oh, you want to ban it?
Do you feel uncomfortable?
No, I feel uncomfortable banning it.
No. I thought you would want to ban it.
No,
I feel security. All of these people who've been running around for the past several years,
including the Biden campaign, by the way.
Your default mode, for me, my default mode is always that, you know, let things fall where they may.
And that's
I can't believe you're there. You're not there, are you? Let things fall where you think we ought to not
do this. No. My issue from the get-go, from the time in the last administration that they began with this whole situation, was that it was unclear to me whether this was actually a national security concern.
Right, so you don't want to ban it. So we happen to be on the same side of this.
All
right,
I've never fundamentally believed that the CCP is somehow taking the data today.
What data is being taken, if it
Correct.
Is being taken?
Lawmakers
have pointed to TikTok's algorithm. They say, you know, one of the reasons that TikTok is as successful as it is because they have this really strong algorithm, and that algorithm is powered with data, Americans' data. And I think they've raised some concerns about exactly what they've done with this data in the past, about how they've targeted journalists. And I think there was a huge shock to Capitol Hill last week when TikTok sent a push notification to all its users and basically said, hey, Congress is trying to ban TikTok, you gotta call your lawmakers. And lawmakers were just flooded. A lot of them just had their phones go straight to voicemail. They said it was a lot of teenagers. Most didn't know what they were calling about. But it freaked them out a little bit that TikTok could just, with one move, put out this push notification.
What do you make of the whole Kellyanne Conway lobbying on behalf of TikTok? Do you see that?
There are a lot of people lobbying on behalf of TikTok. I mean, they're a force. They are a lobbying force on Capitol Hill. The lawmakers who talk about this, they talk about it as a national security interest. But of course, you got the First Amendment interest, you got the legality of it. And then, of course, you simply have the money aspect of it. And we've seen that, you know, play into Trump's recent comments on TikTok and Facebook.
Emily, thank you.
NVIDIA has been sued by three authors who said it used their copyrighted books without permission to train its Nemo AI platform. The authors said their works were part of a data set of nearly 200,000 books that the company used to train its models to simulate ordinary written language before being taken down last October due to reported copyright infringement. The authors say the takedown is an admission that the company trained the model on that data set. NVIDIA has declined to comment on this lawsuit. I know this has been an issue for yours, Andrew, in terms of what data can be used in a large language model to train it. What is up for grabs? Who's getting paid? Should they be getting paid? I think those are a lot of questions here.
Well, the question is, can you train the model off your stuff? And I think the answer is no, you can't. I think that is gonna ultimately be the answer. The question is, what are the fines gonna be?
Right.
How much is this gonna cost everybody? Is there a different business model and what's gonna happen?
Right, but the bigger question for NVIDIA in today's session, if we take a look at the intraday chart on Friday, is the key reversal that it staged. Right. It hit a new high early in the session, and finished at the lows. It was a 10% reversal intraday, and so people are wondering if the easy days of NVIDIA are behind it.
What is it? Trees don't grow to the sky. This one did already. This is already grown to the sky.
It's in the sky.
It's up in the sky. Is it through the sky?
But I think that people would have said that 100 points ago.
We've got some news on the Reddit IPO, the company revealing more details in a new filing. Leslie Picker joins us now with more. Leslie.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Reddit filing an amended S-1 this morning with pricing details for marketing its IPO. The price range is $31 to $34 a share. The company plans to sell 70% of the offering, and selling shareholders, including employees, will comprise the rest. On a fully diluted basis, Reddit's valuation range amounts to $5.8 to $6.4 billion. That's according to a person familiar with the matter. And that's also a 36% decline from the $10 billion valuation Reddit received in a 2021 private funding round. In the prospectus, Reddit calls itself a, quote, global digital city where 73.1 million daily active users collaborate through different communities with common interests. At the high end of the range, Reddit is seeking about 8 times 2023 sales of $804 million. That's slightly higher than where Snap is currently trading at, which is about 6 times. Last year, 98% of Reddit's revenue was generated from third parties advertising on the platform. However, the company recently signed a licensing agreement with Google worth a reported $60 million annually to share content to help train AI models. About 8% of the stock will be reserved as part of Reddit's so-called directed share program. This allows for qualified moderators and users and a few other types of people on Reddit's platform to buy in at the IPO price. I'm told the company is aiming to set a final price in the middle of next week and will debut the following day with a listing on the NYSE under the symbol RDDT. Guys.
Looking through the filing, Alexis Ohanian doesn't own more than 5% of the company, right? Because he's under that, not on the list.
I don't think so. It was interesting when the first filing came out, the first S-1, obviously the one that got a lot of attention was the ownership of Sam Altman. Exactly. So, what this filing does show is those who are selling into the IPO. So we didn't know that initially. So You have Steve Huffman here selling about 500,000 shares. You've got some of, the employees are selling a combined 1.3 million shares. None of the major VCs that own more than 5% appear to be selling here. It's a lot more on the individualized basis, but this is a company that's been private since 2005. It was founded, right. So nearly 19 years. So
how much
you do have a lot of people seeking liquidity.
Leslie Picker, thank you. Appreciate it.
Cheese will be next.
Up next on Squawk Pod, an extended interview with former President Donald Trump, how he would tackle TikTok, tariffs, China, and Elon Musk if he makes it back to the White House.
I've helped him when I was president. I helped him. I've liked him. We obviously have opposing views on a minor subject called electric cars. I'm all for electric cars, but you have to have all of the alternatives also.
We'll be right back with that big conversation.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nexco, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin and Melissa Leaves in for Becky this morning. Joining us on the set, Jay Clayton, former SEC chairman and a CNBC contributor, someone who will join us interviewing the former president who you work for, know fairly well. And I think you have a pretty good feel for the regulatory environment that we had under former President Trump and what we have right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, look, I think the regulatory environment under a future President Trump
would emphasize growth and not sacrificing consumer protection or competition or those core values of regulation. But there is no doubt that this country is going to need growth given our debt position.
Exactly. I believe on the Squawk Newsline, we are joined by former President Donald J. Trump, DJT 45. It is good to welcome you. It's been a while, Mr. President.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
This is the first interview I've been told since you became the presumptive nominee. I'm not sure that prior to last week you weren't already the presumptive nominee, but I think this is your first interview since the State of the Union as well. So can we just start with your vision for this country after watching the State of the Union? How does it differ from what you heard from President Biden, President Trump?
Well, I heard a very angry man who's losing badly in the polls, who's willing to weaponize government like has never taken place in this country. It has taken place in third world countries quite often, actually. And they're willing to use the Justice Department to sue opponents like me, because I'm his only opponent other than life itself. And frankly, you know, I saw a very angry and confused man. I assume he's going to be the candidate. I think it probably maybe it was a terrible performance, but I think it was probably good enough to get him over the heap, to get him over the, you know, the barrier as to whether or not he's going to be their nominee. I was saying that, you know, for a long time, I find it hard to believe, but I think he probably will, and we'll see what happens. But it was really a speech on division and hate more than anything else. He starts off by talking about Snickers. You don't want to really talk about Snickers, even though it's true that they put a little bit less in a bag, but you have more interesting examples of inflation and other things that he was trying to point out than that. You have a lot of big league things you can be talking about, like energy prices through the roof and food prices through the roof. But it was probably the worst State of the Union ever made, according to many. That's not according to me, although according to me it was also, but I haven't heard too many of them.
There are stark policy differences, obviously, Mr. President, but one thing that I think that at least the perception is that there's not a whole lot of difference between what you think we should do with entitlements or non-discretionary spending and what President Biden is proposing. It's almost the third rail of politics. And we've got a $33, $34 trillion total debt built up, and very little we can do in terms of cutting spending. Discretionary is not going to help. Have you changed your outlook on how to handle entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President? It seems like it something has to be done, or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements. Tremendous bad management of entitlements. There's tremendous amounts of things and numbers of things you can do. So I don't, you know, necessarily agree with the statement. I know that they're going to end up weakening Social Security because the country is weak. I mean, you take a look at outside of the stock market, what we're going through hell. People are going through hell. They have, and I believe the number is 50%. They say 32 and 33%. I believe we have a cumulative inflation of over 50%. That means people are, you know, they have to make more than 50% more over a fairly short period of time to stay up. They've gotten routed. The middle class in our country has been routed. And the middle class largely built our country. And they have been treated very, very badly with policy. When I was president, I was doing a job. We were going to start to pay off debt. We were drill, baby, drill. We were producing oil, but we were going at a much higher level, oil and gas. We were doing, you know, we were third when I started. And when I ended, we were one by a long shot, and we were very close. We were energy independent. We were very close to becoming energy dominant, Joe. We were going to be dominant, so dominant like double what Saudi Arabia and Russia were doing. And we were on that path. We were going to be paying down debt. We were doing a lot of things. And then we got hit with COVID. We did a fantastic job with COVID, but nobody wins with COVID. I guess China found that out because they ultimately got hit very hard also, but nobody wins with COVID. And so we had to do other things. We had to help, you know, if we didn't do the kinds of things we did for the economy, we would have had a 1929 type depression. And I had to stay out in front of it. And we did. We did a great job on that. And we did with all of the things coming up with Regeneron, doing so much else, getting all, because, you know, we had empty, when I came in, we had empty, I call them empty cupboards. We had empty shelves. We didn't have equipment. We didn't have the gowns. We didn't have the ventilators. We didn't have anything. This country wasn't prepared for a thing like that. And I'm not even blaming anybody in that because, you know, when it came, nobody thought a pandemic would ever happen again. It sounds like an ancient problem, not a problem that you'd have in a very modern age. It was like an ancient thing. You know, who would ever? So I'm not blaming anybody for that. But we had empty cupboards, and I got them stocked, and I got them stocked fast. And we did a great job with it. Never got credit. I got credit for the greatest economy. I got credit for foreign policy. I got credit for knocking out ISIS and not going into wars. But we beat ISIS. But I never got the credit for having done a great job with that.
Mr. President, someday,
I think history will give us the credit.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We got Jay Clayton is here. I know you worked with Jay. Jay was at the SEC. I want to get Jay to talk to you about regulation, et cetera. Okay. But before I turn it over to Jay, I just wanted to ask you about something very specific for regulation, and that is Bitcoin. And I have in the past, I don't know if you recall, but I said, you got to look at this closely, Mr. President. And you know, the current SEC commissioner, Gary Gensler, finally allowed for these spot ETFs, and now we see Bitcoin at almost 72,000, but it's almost as if it's in spite of some of the efforts over regulation of maybe the Biden administration. Do you have any thoughts now on crypto?
Well, it's taken its own life. You know, I do little things sometimes for fun and, you know, make money with it, but I have fun with it too.
You mean NFTs. You bought Bitcoin?
No. No, but it sometimes will let people pay through Bitcoin or will let people get involved in a new, if you think of it, it's an additional form of currency. And I used to say, you know, I want one currency. I want the dollar. I don't want people leaving the dollar. And all that. And I feel that way. But I will tell you, it has taken on a life. I did a thing that people smile at, but it was wild. We did 1,000 sneakers, so limited edition sneaker run. The last one, and you could go through, you know, our crazy new currencies, because that's what I call them. They're crazy, whether it's Bitcoin or others. And so many people were buying these things. And ultimately, the last pair of sneakers sold for approximately, I hear, $450,000. It was a limited edition, a run. They were gold. They were, you know, nice, cute. And we thought it was just a very small thing. It was a branding thing and had a good time with it. The last pair sold for $450,000. People were going crazy for these sneakers. You probably were too. Everybody was. I have every friend I have has called me for a pair of sneakers. So it just took off. And I noticed that so many of them were paid for with this, with the new currency. It's a new cryptocurrency. And I couldn't believe the amount. And I'm saying, you know, this thing has really, and other things I do, people are using it. And, you know, I would be, I'm very much a traditionalist. I like staying with the dollar. You know that from when I was there. It's make the dollar the choice. I hate when countries go off the dollar. I would not allow countries to go off the dollar because when we lose that standard, that will be like losing a revolutionary war. That will be a hit to our country, just like losing a war. And we can't let that happen. And too many countries now are fighting to get off the dollar. And frankly, and I know Jay feels strongly about this, and Jay did a fantastic job, by the way, in a group where there's always scandal and problems. Jay went through 4 years. There wasn't one scandal. I don't know, Jay, maybe you can tell me, but there wasn't one scandal. That is the most scandalous position because it involves massive amounts of money. With Jay Clayton, we had no scandal, zero, nothing whatsoever. So I thought it was great. But I have seen there has been a lot of use of that, and I'm not sure that I'd want to take it away at this point.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. President, thank you for that. That was nice. Before you came on, I was saying to Joe, look, your regulatory agenda in a second term would be one of pro-growth, not anti-consumer, not anti-competition, but pro-growth.
Right.
But mostly correct. Because we don't have a lot of fiscal tools left. Do you want to talk about the pro-growth agenda that you had in the last term?
Yeah. Number one, we don't have a choice. It has to be pro. It's not like we have a choice. It'd be nice to say let's get nice and conservative and let's not grow. If we don't grow, we have $35 trillion out there. We have to grow our way out of it more than anything else, but we also have to cut spending, and we can cut spending. There's massive amounts of waste. Look, we give foreign countries trillions and trillions of dollars a year, and when you want to cut them, you're met with levels. It's crazy. When you want to cut some of these foreign countries, many of whom don't like us, many of whom, almost all of whom take advantage of. Everybody takes advantage of the United States. And I had that very much stopped. But they very much take advantage of the United States. China, until I came along, China was killing us. China was taking out 300 and just in terms of numbers, we're just, it's $507 billion a year. Now, under Biden, it's worse. It's gotten much worse. And no country can sustain when we can't sustain that. When a country just rips us off like China, then what I did is that the tariffs were forcing companies back to the United States. We want those companies that go to China and many other countries, not only China, the European Union rips us as almost as bad as China, but they do it with a smile. Nobody thinks of the European Union that way. They say, oh, they're wonderful, but they really take advantage of us. And until I came along, they took advantage of us militarily. As you know, NATO was a total disaster for us. We were paying almost think of it, European Union, we're paying almost all for their military. We were paying close to 100% until I came along. I said, I'm not doing it. You're going to have to pay. We're not doing it anymore. They said, would you protect us if we don't? I said, if you're delinquent, they said, yes. I said, if you're delinquent, you're not going to be protected. And $400 billion came in like clockwork. Obama, Bush, everybody else, they did absolutely nothing.
Mr. President, I just wanted to ask you, though, you also talked about proposing a 10% tariff, if you will. And I wanted to ask you about that because the center-right American Action Forum, which is a think tank, said that they thought the plan would, quote, distort global trade, discourage economic activity, and have broad negative consequences for the U.S. economy.
Well, they're wrong. It would distort international trade. It would bring it back to the United States. We have companies. If you look at India, you look at China, you look at so many different countries, they're smart, much smarter than our country. We were getting ready to do this. And I had it just about set.
But you don't think it would result in higher prices for American families? By some estimates, it could be the equivalent of $2,000 a family, according to The Economist.
No, I think I think taxes could be cut. I think other things could happen to more than adjust that. But I'm a big believer in tariffs for two reasons. Number one, I fully believe in them economically when you're being taken advantage of by other countries. For instance, China was taking advantage of us on the steel. They were destroying our entire steel industry, which was never doing very well over the last 25 years anyway, but, because it's been eaten alive by foreign competition. And they were dumping steel. I put a 50% tax on China steel coming in, and
Every person in the steel industry, when they see me, they started crying. They would hug me. They would kiss me. Sir, you saved our industry. I put a very strong 50% tariff on dumping steel, on their dump steel. And it, by the way, nothing was perfect. Frankly, the tariff should have been higher. I was getting ready to do that, by the way.
Mr. President.
But the tariff should have been higher. But
are you concerned at all that there would be
This saved the whole industry. But one thing, let me just tell you, beyond the economics, it gives you power in dealing with other countries. Because China would come in and say, no, no more tax, no more tax. They were absolutely fine for me to deal with because they were so petrified of me putting on additional tariffs. And we don't use that. China is right now our boss. They are the boss of the United States, almost like we're a subsidiary of China.
Is there no concern?
The Biden administration has been so weak.
Mr. President, is there no concern that China could impose retaliatory tariffs or retaliatory actions that would make doing business in China difficult for American companies, which are dependent on China for growth?
That's okay. Yeah, sure.
It's
they might do that, but you know what?
So tell Starbucks, tell McDonald's that it's going to be all of a sudden maybe more difficult to do business there.
But they didn't do it with me. You know, we went through years and they didn't do it with me. And they never pulled that trigger. That's a big trigger for them to pull. But even if they do, let American companies come back to America. Look, if you want to sell a car in China, you can't. Okay, you have to put a massive tax or a massive tariff. If we make our cars, we can't sell in China. They charge tremendous tariffs. Well, they're very smart. They're saying, come over to this country. Look at Apple. I've had a great relationship with Apple. And with Tim and everybody over there, it was fine. But I said, you got to build your plants here. They built a big plant in Texas. I was working on that very, very hard with various companies that they build in China, because if they build in China, they have no tax. So they make it in China. I said, we want you to make it here. They were coming back. They did. They came back with a very big plant here. I said, I'm not doing this unless you. And the whole topic of tariffs to me is so simple. Number one, it's great economically for us, and it brings our companies back. Because if you charge tariffs to China, they're going to build their car plants here, and they're going to employ our people. They're right now building big plants because of Biden. They're building big plants in Mexico. So they build a big China plant in Mexico. Then they sell it across the border with very little tax. It's ridiculous. We want them to build their plants in the United States. We don't want to get cars from China. We want to get cars made by China in the United States using our workers. But it also gives us a big political power. Tariffs are tremendously powerful in terms of stopping wars because they don't want tariffs. And frankly, I made them sing. I made other countries sing with the threat of tariffs. And if you don't have tariffs, we have nothing whatsoever on them. It's we have lost such an opportunity. When I've seen, if you want to build a Harley Davidson as an example, I said, how are you doing in India? They were in the White House. How are you doing in India? No good. Why? They have a 100% tariff or more than that even. And therefore, we basically can't say because you have to double and triple the price in India. I said, so what are you going to do? Well, they want us to build a plant in India, and that way we don't have. So they go and they build a big plant in India. We started doing the same thing here. And we have the pot of gold. We have the best pot of gold. But eventually we won't have that because our country is going down and we're not going to have it. We're losing our economic power.
Mr. President, talking about China, I want to ask you about perhaps one of the biggest business stories and policy stories of the moment, and that is TikTok. You have called TikTok a national security threat. At one point, you said that their, quote, data collection threatens to allow the Chinese Communist Party access to Americans' personal and proprietary information. And yet it appears that you've now reversed your view on banning TikTok. Why is that?
So I had it done. And then Congress said, well, they ultimately usually fail. like extremely political, and they're extremely subject to people called lobbyists who happen to be very, very talented, very good, and very rich. I could have banned TikTok. I had it banned just about. I could have gotten it done.
But I said, you know what? But I'll leave it up to you. I didn't push them too hard because, you know, let them do their own research and development. And they decided not to do it. But as you know, I was at the point where I could have gotten it done if I wanted to. I sort of said, you guys decide. You make that decision because it's a tough decision to make. Frankly, there are a lot of people on TikTok that love it. There are a lot of young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it. There are a lot of users. There's, you know, a lot of good and there's a lot of bad with TikTok. But the thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media. What Facebook did with lockboxes, with the $500 million Zuckerbucks lockboxes that he put in, I mean, I consider it illegal, but, you know, they put people in jail when they spend more than $5,600 in a campaign. They go to jail if they're $200. Look at Dinesh D'Souza. Right. They put him in jail over a couple of $100. And yet here's a guy spends $500 million and he doesn't go to jail.
Mr. President, though, is TikTok, but do you believe that TikTok is a national security threat or not? Because if it is, and I believe that the emergency powers order that you had put in place at the time suggested that it was. Was that not true?
I do believe that. I do believe it. And we have to very much go into privacy and make sure that we are protecting the American people's privacy and data rights. And I agree. But, you know, we also have that problem with you have that problem with Facebook and lots of other companies, too. I mean, they get the information. They get plenty of information and they deal with China and they'll do whatever China wants. You know, if you look at some of our American companies, when you talk about highly sophisticated companies that you think are American, they're not so American. They deal in China, and China, if China wants anything from them, they will give it. So that's a national security risk also. But when I look at it, I'm not looking to make Facebook double the size. And if you ban TikTok, Facebook, and others, but mostly Facebook will be a big beneficiary. And I think Facebook has been very bad for our country, especially when it comes to elections.
Mr. President, you met recently with Jeff Yass, who's a hedge fund manager, has a stake in TikTok. He's a huge GOP donor. Steve Bannon has suggested that you've been paid off to switch your view. How did your view change? How did that come about? And did you have a conversation with Jeff Yass about it?
No, I didn't. I met with him very briefly. I made a speech and I said hello to him and his wife, who's lovely. And actually, her primary thing was on education. She wants choice, as I do. And she mentioned to me more than anything, you know, we talked about education. It was a meeting that lasted for a few minutes. No, the only one I met was, I met them both. And, I don't think I ever met him before, but he never mentioned TikTok. She did mention school choice, and that's what her whole, in fact, she said, my whole life is based around school choice. It was a very important thing to her, and I agree with it.
Mr. President, I think you also had a meeting with Elon Musk recently.
And, I did.
And I saw a piece written that Silicon Valley, uncharacteristically, I'm not saying it's, you know, 100% behind your candidacy, but certainly there seems to be a sea change to some extent this time around. What did Elon Musk tell you? You think you'll eventually get his support in some way, whether it's just verbal or monetary?
I don't know. Look, I've been friendly with him over the years. I've helped him when I was president. I helped him. I've liked him. We obviously have opposing views on a minor subject called electric cars. I'm all for electric cars, but you have to have all of the alternatives also. You can't just go to electric. I mean, you have a grid system in this country that's obsolete and a disaster. It's one of the things we worked on a lot is our grid system. It can't produce the electricity. It can't distribute the electricity. And, you know, the electric cars are not even a possibility to go all electric. This Biden all electric mandate is by very, very stupid people. First of all, they don't go far, they cost too much, and they're all going to be made in China. And the auto workers are going to vote for Trump. I don't know about their top union people because they're just riveted into Democrats. They have no idea why. They're like blind sheep. But
the auto workers are going to vote for Trump because they understand, look at my numbers in Michigan. I'm leading him by 12 or 14 points. It's always hard for a Republican, but not now. We're leading in a lot of places that Republicans don't lead in, including with African Americans. We have numbers with the African American population, the black population, the Asian population, Hispanics. We have numbers like nobody's ever seen before. So I think we're going to have a very good election, and I think that's probably why Silicon Valley is. But I think they're also with me because, you know, I want to help businesses. They saw what happened. We had, and you know that, just prior to this horrible scourge coming in, a gift of China, we had the greatest economy in the history of the world. There was never an economy. Blacks were doing the best they've ever done. Hispanics, women, Asian men with a diploma from MIT, without a diploma at all from a high school. Every single group was doing great. And that's the way it is. And we had the greatest economy ever. And we were getting ready to pay off debt. We were drilling. We were doing things. Think of it. I got Anwar approved. It's bigger, perhaps close, but probably bigger than Saudi Arabia in Alaska. And one of the first things Biden did is end it. Reagan tried to get it. He couldn't get it done. Nobody got it done but me. And nobody else could have gotten it done. Anwar is the biggest, probably the biggest site, Jay, if you look. Remember, we celebrated that one. Nobody could believe I got it done. And they were getting ready to start drilling, and they were doing it. It's going to be great for Alaska, a tremendous economic development for Alaska. But I got it done, and they ended it. We were going to pay off debt. We were going to do things that were incredible. And then we had an election that I would be very nice on your show.
Let me ask you about that.
Didn't go too well. Didn't go too well.
Let me ask you about that, Mr. President. Something that I want you to comment on that I've said on this program is, you know, we have this tendency to want to import European regulation to the U.S., thinking that European-style regulation, whether it's around the environment, whether it's around how we deal with national security, financial matters and the like. Can you comment on that? Because I think the U.S. is different. And, you know, we have to play to our strengths.
Well, the last thing we should be copying. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we have a tendency to follow them a little bit, amazingly, in regulation because they're doing so badly. They do so badly. They become a socialist state. And, you know, they're not doing great. You look at what happened. Angela, who, believe it or not, I was very friendly with her, but I disagreed with her in allowing 2 million illegal aliens, we would say, or migrants, or you call them any way you want. There's about 19 different names now, and everyone becomes obsolete within about 2 weeks. But she allowed 2 million people coming from, now they like to call them neighbors. You know, the new name by the Democrats is, we'd like to call them neighbors. So they want to call the people that are flowing into our country, and in many cases, killing people, neighbors. But, you know, Europe, what they did, what Germany's done to itself, between that and their energy policies, has been a disaster for Germany. Nobody talks about it. And they totally reverse course, amazingly. They totally reverse course. So we shouldn't be following them. We have to go by our own. We need guys like Jay Clayton and others. Jay did a fantastic job in deregulating so much of the SEC and so much of, you know, of what he did. He was a big deregulator. And again, he did it with it was a beautiful thing to watch. That agency ran so small. You know, I had a lot of great people. We never talk about those people. And I think that's natural. We talk about some of the ones I didn't like and some of the ones I had in there I didn't like. But mostly I had fantastic people because, you know, we got and you can check every record in the book. Nobody was even close. I did the biggest cut in regulations. We gave the biggest tax cut in history, and we gave the biggest regulation cut in history. We gave a tax cut, which, by the way, is coming up. It's going to be very bad, I think, for the Democrats, but it'll be very bad for this country if that's not extended, the Trump tax cuts. But they're the biggest tax cuts in history. The other one is we gave the biggest regulation cuts in history. Jay was a part of that from his what he was doing. We gave them on the environment. We gave them on so many different things. We had plants built in Louisiana that were refineries that were absolutely dead for 14 years, and I got them approved in one day. I've got two plants in Louisiana, massive plants, like three Empire State Buildings laying on their side. These were the biggest plants. I got them done and literally got them done in one day. They were waiting for 14 years for permits. I got them done in one day.
You mentioned earlier about the country losing economic power, and some might cite the downgrade of the United States credit rating as one example of how we are losing some of our economic power. When Fitch downgraded the U.S. to a AA over the summer, they specifically cited the increasing polarization, declining governance over the past 20 years, but more specifically, they cited the January 6th insurrection. Under your presidency, if you are reelected, what can you tell us about how stable the U.S. will be, especially as it appears that you are stoking some political divide? You held a rally in Waco, Texas, and you're sort of playing to this polarization of groups here.
Well, when I had the rally in Waco, we had 100,000 people show up. That's where they wanted the rally. You know, I'm like a businessman politician. You go where the people are, and I go to places. We had a tremendous rally this weekend. We're having rallies in Michigan. The rallies are bigger than they've ever been. We have, as soon as the season gets a little bit warmer, when we can do the outdoor. Right now, there's no arena that can hold.
Does it matter to you, though, that we are downgraded, that we've been downgraded, and that our credit rating could be at further risk should there be further political polarization?
It's not because of January 6th. We get downgraded because of incompetent people, very incompetent people doing incompetent things. And as far as the dollar is concerned, we're losing countries. We lose Iran. We lose this one. We have Russia that's out. We have many, many countries that we throw out of the system, and we can't lose that system. That system is the dollar. That system is a very important system to the vitality and strength of our country. If we ever do lose that, they take out Russia. China would love to be, you know, the leader of the pack is China, because they'd love to take it over. And it will be possible to take it over if we're not strong. We have to hold countries in. And if countries want to get out, we're going to have to say, well, if you want to get out of our system and go to, let's say, a Russian version or your own version, then we're not going to do any trade with you. And they'll be back in about 2 seconds. But it depends on who's posing that statement to whoever it is, the leader. Like, you're dealing with Macron, or you're dealing with the leaders. You have to be able to talk to them properly. Our people don't know how to talk to them. Our people are like, we go there hat in hand. We're like beggars. Our country is no longer respected. The people representing us are not respected. I just had Viktor Orban, a tough man from Hungary. He was at my place in Florida. I get along with him very well, friendly, but I have respect for him. He made the statement. I thought it was a wonderful statement. He said, we'll solve the problems of the world if Donald Trump comes back. He said Russia was afraid of him. China was afraid of him. We had no problems whatsoever under Trump. And now we have Israel being attacked, which, by the way, would have never happened. We have Ukraine and Russia fighting. That would have never happened. All of those dead people and blown up cities, because Ukraine is now just it's like a demolition site, what they've done to Ukraine. None of that would have happened. All those people would be alive today if the election result were, let's say, correct. It'd be nice.
Mr. President, though, given how divided it feels this country is, I want to play you just a piece of tape from Ken Langone, who I believe supported you in the last election, who was on Squawk Box earlier, about a month and a half ago now. And I want to show you what he had to say, because I think it represents a lot of voters out there. And I'm just curious if you would react to it and explain sort of how you feel about it to the voters. Look at this, if you could, for a second.
I worry if Trump wins that it's going to be 4 years of getting even. And that's scary, because we've got serious issues coming up that need to be addressed.
What do you think of that, Mr. President? Because I think that there is a feeling that there is still an anger and a frustration that you have about certain issues.
Well, look, I've never been a fan of Ken. I don't know if he supported me. Maybe he supported me because I was the only one that he could support, because that's the reason. But I've never been a fan. I've been a fan of Bernie Marcus, a big fan. And Bernie Marcus is a big fan of mine. And that was the side I chose. And frankly, you know, he's right in one sense. People think that there's going to be revenge. And I say, no, the revenge is going to be success. It's not going to be revenge in a revenge stance. It's really going to be success. We're going to turn our country around. We're going to bring sense and common sense. You know, people say you're conservative. I'm not conservative. You know what I am? I'm a man of common sense. And a lot of conservative policies are common sense. We're not going to have open borders. You're going to have to come in legally. We're going to close up the borders. I had the best border. I had the safest border in the history of our country. And it was all he had to do is he could have gone to the beach like he likes doing. He thinks he looks good in a bathing suit. If he would have left everything in place, including the people that were doing it, I had the best border in history. We built 571 miles of wall. I got Mexico to give us massive numbers of free soldiers. Now, there's a case of tariffs. I said, if you don't give us the soldiers, we're going to put a 25% tariff on your cars. They laughed at me when I said I want 28,000 soldiers. And I like, you know, the president of Mexico. I think he's a very good guy. He happens to be a socialist, but you can't have everything. But they laughed at me. I said, I want you to give us 25, 28,000 soldiers on our border to stop the people that are coming in with the caravans. And they laughed at me. I said, that's okay. You don't want to do it, right? Yeah. I'm going to put a 25% tariff on all of your products, including all of the cars that you're selling. You know, they stole. They took, like we were babies, 32% of our car manufacturing business over the last 30 years. 32% is now being made in Mexico and getting bigger all the time. And now, as I told you before, with China going in, building plants there to sell into the United States, I would say to China, if you're building a plant on our border to build cars in Mexico and to sell them into the United States, I'm putting a 50% tariff on all those cars. And you know what? They would stop building their plant in about 2 months. But we don't do that. We have stupid people running our government, to be honest.
Mr. President, we will see. I know you've got a lot going on. You've got the campaign. You've got the legal issues that makes people sometimes wonder, you know, how to prioritize. And you just keep charging.
Well, the legal issues aren't, hey Joe, the legal issues aren't legal issues. They're Biden issues. Biden put beautiful Fannie, who's turned out to be now a corrupt district attorney, but in my opinion, they're almost all corrupt. All of the stuff that you see is weaponized government. The DA in New York is being run by the DOJ. They put their top person into the DA's office. All of this stuff, and frankly, I get a lot of credit for it. I think I'm much more popular now because they did it. It backfired on them. They've weaponized government. Think of it. They put Colangelo, one of their top people, like the top person, into the DA's office to go get Trump. They deal with Letitia James, a real lowlife. They put people with her. They're dealing with her all the time to go get Trump. These are the Democrats. The prosecutors and judges in New York, our country could fall because of it. That's how bad it is. And companies are moving out of New York because of what they've done to me. And I'm going to end up winning on appeal. And if I didn't win an appeal on these ridiculous decisions, if I didn't win an appeal, the most ridiculous decisions, including the Miss Bergdorf Goodman, a person I never met. I have no idea who she is, except one thing. I got sued. From that point on, I said, wow, that's crazy what this is. I got charged. I was given a false accusation and had to post a $91 million bond on a false accusation. People aren't moving into New York because of the kind of crap they're pulling on me. And I feel like I'm a pioneer. What's happening is we have to be very careful. We have a very fragile country. People are rejecting it and they're watching. Normally somebody would be out of office, stuff like that happens. My numbers are much higher than they would have been had this not happened. But you have to be able to speak about it. It's a very dangerous thing, very, very dangerous thing for our country, what they're doing. It's the weaponization of the DOJ, the FBI, et cetera.
Well, we appreciate all the time you've given us this morning, Mr. President. Look forward to another conversation in the not too distant future.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Jay Clayton is here with us. Would you work in another Trump administration, if asked?
Look, if the president asks you to work in a position and you're very confident in the team around, you have to say yes. I think anybody should. Anybody who has the opportunity to make a difference for people in America should do it.
Do you think that if he were to win a re-election, you think he'd have trouble getting people to the type of quality people? Because there were people that were expressing that concern. I've heard the opposite, that people are lined up once again.
You know what? We just saw Stephen Mnuchin. Saw Stephen Mnuchin, do a transaction. He came on this network.
Yep.
His ability to articulate exactly what was going on, to demonstrate competence, people like that did incredibly well in the last administration, and I think you'll get people like Stephen Mnuchin again.
I think it's good to have go around to just all of us ask questions. And you will concede that he's willing to take any questions from anyone without saying, uh-oh, I'm going to get in trouble, right? You at least acknowledge that?
He tries to engage with the question. I'm not.
And he's ready. And how long was that? 40 minutes of, even got Merkel right. All right. Thank you, Jay Clayton, for being here.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
We'll leave it here on this Monday. Thank you for tuning into Squawk Pod today. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Thanks to Melissa Lee for filling in today. You can catch Squawk Box live for 3 hours on CNBC every day starting at 6 Eastern, and you can always catch the highlights right here on Squawk Pod. Make sure you give us a follow wherever you're listening now. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. X-Go, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. Ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.